Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm J.D. Holliday, and welcome to A Good Story is a Good Story special edition with your host, book and script consultant Marcia Casper Cook, here on BTR's World of Ink Network. Be prepared to call in and chat with our special guests today, Marie Crist and Pamela Wright. It's 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on December 2nd, 2011. All shows for A Good Story is a Good Story can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/worldofinknetwork, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address or on iTunes by researching World of Ink Network. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, the phone number is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259. Or you can join us here in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, Marcia.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad to have you back. At least we know what the phone numbers are that I never say. And, you know, what can I say? I get to that. Okay, hi, everybody. And it's Friday. It's a special edition. And I just, you know, we have a really packed show of information. So I'm just going to talk about this right now about the two shows that we're having pretty soon. Okay, actually pretty soon is Monday. Monday, Virginia and I are back together again, and we're actually doing it on Monday, and both of us, World of the Stories for Children and A Good Story is a Good Story, and we have a special, very special Emma Dryden, who has a resume that is unbelievable, but she was Vice President Publisher of Athenian Books, Young Readers, and imprints of Simon & Schuster. So I know all the children's, we have so many children's authors, you know, out there that I hope everybody listens. And I talked to her, and she is really so interesting. And I think we're going to find out some of the things that we all want to know is why some of us haven't gotten published by Simon & Schuster and some of the Big Six. And so we'll find that out, and it'll be a great, and Jan Britland is joining us because she also was on last week, and she has gone for some consulting to Emma. That is what Emma Dryden is doing now, so that will be a really good show, and we're going to learn a lot on that show. Then we have a show on December 6th, which is Tuesday night. Oh, the show on Monday is at 11 a.m. in Mountain Time. It's noon Central, and it's 1 Eastern.
Yeah,
and A Good Story is a Good Story has on, which is me, on December 6th, actually that's Tuesday, we have a special 25th anniversary of Sisters in Crime, which was started by Sarah Paretsky, and there are several authors coming on, and we're going to have a great time, and I've talked to all of them, and a lot of people want to write mystery and thriller, and it's a huge group, it's actually nationwide, and they're coming on the show to talk about it, and it's kind of funny because Sarah Paretsky, I went to workshops years ago where she was talking, and that must have been it was a long time ago, but now all of these Sisters in Crime are, it's an incredible group. There's a lot of writers, and people love mysteries, and that will be on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, because I know people, everybody is in different parts of the country, so I like to kind of say what time it is, because when we all look at Blog Talk Radio or some of the shows, we don't know in our area where the shows are, you know, what time they're going to be on. And so those are the two shows for next week. I have more shows, but I'll talk about them on Monday or Tuesday, and actually I'm supposed to be doing one a week, so go figure what I say. And today we have wonderful guests, as J.D. was talking about, and I'm going to bring them right out there, Marie Crist and Pamela Wright. You guys want to come out and talk and say hi to everybody?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. And we have a really tough subject to talk about today, and these two women, they're mother and daughter, and that's a good thing. And they have teamed up, and they want to really go out and speak and talk about child abuse and human trafficking. And they have written books, and they are thrillers, vigilante thrillers. And through that, you will be seeing if you read these books. And I've started to read one of the books, and I'll tell you something. You know, these are subjects people don't always want to read about, but you need to, and it's that's why they're out here. They're talking about it. It is done in fiction, but they are talking with the truth, and they're going to tell us today how to keep our children safe because everybody worries about this, and there's a lot going on in the news. So I think I'm going to bring Marie out first, and Marie, you want to just talk a little bit about your book and about what you do, and then your mom, which because she already said she wants you to go first, so then you can go first, and go ahead.
Okay, I'm Marie Crist, and I have written The Citizen Chronicles, and it's a series of books that takes readers into an undercover operation run by a group of men and women who call themselves The Citizens. Their mission is to hunt down child predators and rapists and go ahead and commit acts of vigilante justice before these perpetrators' next victims even realize that their death is imminent. And in the first book, Citizen Out, I introduce my readers to this vigilante organization and explain how some of its primary operatives came to be recruited and trained for their participation in these dangerous and silent missions. And throughout the books, I constantly challenge my readers to really determine and figure out how they truly do feel about vigilante justice when a child's life is in danger.
And you know, I don't want to forget this. I want you to tell them where your website and also where they can buy the books.
The book is available at barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, also on my website, which is mariecrist.com. And I also have the book trailer that I put up that has really affected a lot of people. You better have Kleenexes ready because it's a very emotional trailer.
And, you know, this is an emotional subject, and you've done it in a way which people, you know, sometimes this is a good way to get people involved in this. And I think that both of you are doing the same thing and really out there trying to help people. And so your mom, do you want to come out from wherever you went? No, do you want to come out? And I honestly, you know, because when I talk to both of you, this is an incredible subject, and I know, and I don't want to forget the fact that your mom did foster care, and so we'll talk about that also. I mean, you two are doing something that a lot of people want to do but don't ever do. So I think you should be proud of yourself that you're out there doing this in a time when everybody needs it. So, Pam, do you want to come out and, you know, just talk a little bit about what you do?
Absolutely. I'm Pamela Wright, Pam for short. I'm a foster parent, I'm an adoptive parent, and a birth parent. And I've written a series, Justifiable. And my first book is Justifiable Oregon. And it takes you into the world of just unsuspecting citizens living their lives, their everyday lives on the Oregon coast. And I always like to ask people, have you ever wished something bad would happen to someone evil because God and the law took too long? Well, there are those that risk it all for the rest of us. And Justifiable Oregon is a suspense thriller, and it is about those few and the dangers they willingly face to keep the rest of us safe. Duplicity is the exquisite yacht manned by such men of integrity, who are lethal modern-day pirates. The novel presents a unique twist in that they sail into the lives and deaths of today's most deadly and prolific human traffickers. Duplicity's crew are men on a mission, and as they target and take down the world's wealthiest businessmen who market the most innocent among us, our children and our young women. The unsuspecting citizens of Seaside and Cannon Beach, Oregon, have no idea that the infamous lighthouse known as Terrible Tilly, 1 mile off their coastline, is the final destination for those that prey on the innocent, or that the beautiful ship in their harbor sails in search of the lost, the taken, and those they hold responsible.
You know, listening to it, you know, I know that you write in some of the things where you've seen this on TV all the time, and we all do. You know, what age group is the age group that they basically look for? I mean, does it span several years?
Oh, it spans. You know, in my research, what I discovered was that Brazil is the leading port in the world that exports the most human beings, and that is men, women, and children.
Wow.
They sell men for mostly as laborers, even for the Amazonian mining industry. They sell infants. They sell children. They sell young women, older women. It makes no difference. There is a market for every person that's either that can be used as a sexual being or as a work slave. These same slaves are indentured their entire lives, either as sexual slaves, and maybe when their sexual worth is used up, they become laborers. When their labor is used up, often they are sent to China for organ harvesting.
Oh, boy. Wow.
And a lot of it's happening. What most people don't understand is it's happening here in America in our own backyards. I mean, in fact, Traffic 911, the organization who goes and helps rescue girls and children who are being held in human trafficking, they rescued a girl from the Dallas area. She was 16 years old. She had been taken when she was 15. So for a year, she's been a sex slave right there in Dallas. They rescued her this weekend. And they found her on Backpage.com, which is a website that we've been trying to get down for quite some time now.
What's it called? Backpage.com?
Backpage.com, which is kind of like a generic version of Craigslist. It was started to almost, you know, be like Craigslist. But the human traffickers and the pedophiles have really latched onto this website, and they do a lot of their trading on it. And so Traffic 911 found this girl on Backpage.com. Her naked pictures of her were up, and they were able to hire a private investigator that found out where she was being held, and they went in and rescued her. And, you know, the thing is they're kidnapping kids as young as 7 years old right here in America and selling them. And that is you know, as far as young child age, they're seeing a lot of it right around the 7-8 year old mark.
What can the public do? I mean, you know, what can they do to stop that? I mean, is there anything that, I mean, people probably don't realize that this is going on. And, you know, they think they see it on, you know, TV and it's not really happening. But what you see on TV is happening. They take it from events.
Yes, they do. And there is information out there on the internet from Traffic 911, the Polaris Project, on my website, on Pamela's website, where it's what to look for in recognizing human trafficking. Because it could be happening on your street, and you don't know what to look for. You haven't read up on what are the indications that this is happening. Familiarizing yourself with what to look for and the keeping an eye out and looking for it and then calling the authorities.
What do they look for? What would the person look for?
The children are not going to, they're all constantly going to have a adult that is standing over them, never allows them to speak. They're not going to be seen as often as normal kids in the neighborhood. They're not going to be allowed to just go out and play. They may or may not be enrolled in public school because a lot of these captors want to keep the children right there next to them. They will not necessarily be clean. Pediatricians and stuff like that, if they see kids coming in that have got unexplained injuries, things like that.
I used to work for pediatricians for years. You're right, and that's true. You have to look for that when you're a pediatrician because
and
are
nurses.
Signs. Yes, yes.
But see, these kids are not going to speak. they're in fear. There's going to be an adult with them at all times that will speak for them and almost be in an aggressive, belligerent way. And, you know, the kid is going to very much show signs of possibly bruising, not being bathed, not being out on their own at all, things like that.
As a foster parent, I have seen what I consider to be human trafficking within families. And by that I mean years ago, these children are all grown adults now, and I can speak of this without naming any names, of course.
Right.
But
right.
I had a sibling group. I had a sibling group, and they were all girls, and their mother used them to gain services and products or food or what have you. She passed her daughters around in order to gain services from men. So it may be somebody to work on the car. It may be somebody to bring food. It may be whatever it is that she wanted. She offered up her children. To me, that's human trafficking.
Yeah.
To me, that is, you know, what I've seen in the past 13 years as a foster parent is I've seen 90% of the children that's come through my home have been sexually abused. And of those 90%, the vast majority has been by neighbors, friends, family members, or mom's boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know that's true, because I had Erin Marin, and there's a law now in Chicago. Well, it's actually Illinois. She went to fight for it, and she fights for things like this, and there's a Marin's law now, because you can't tell the kids to talk to their parents a lot of times because it is their parents.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's what's so horrible
about
it.
Yes. And a lot of times, I hate to say this, but there are a lot of parents out there that convince the children that that is their contribution to the family's welfare.
It is appalling.
It is despicable.
Yeah. Because you know, being a parent, and you know, all of us on here are. You know, it's just amazing that somebody could honestly do that with their own child for their own purposes. But as you say, so you know, if they start it, do they continue it always, or do they stop some? You know, is it for like long periods of time?
It's my belief that they don't stop until they're forced to stop. What becomes a convenience, or in their mind, in their depraved mind, acceptable form of child labor, then they will not stop until they are forced to stop. And the only way that they're forced to stop is when somebody picks up a phone and makes a phone call. I feel that there is something wrong next door. I feel there's something wrong with this person I go to church
with,
whatever.
Sometimes people don't want to take the initiative to do that. They feel, but I guess it's better for family services to come and check them out rather than forget about it. Right. I think that's how people probably should do it.
You do not have to give your name if you have a neighbor that you suspect and you do not want repercussions. You do not have to give your name. They do not ask for your name unless you want to give it. And they are very adept at going to the school. And the school is, you know, absolutely in compliance with letting a social worker take a child from a class to a private room for an interview. And these social workers know if something has happened or not, or if it's just somebody trying to pull a vendetta on you or what have you. So if you have done nothing, that will be found out in the first 10 minutes of a conversation with the child, and you will be left alone. But if you are party to trafficking your child, then, you know, the social services will be in your life as they should be.
It's so hard to visualize this, but it is true. I mean, you know, and I think people sometimes when they see it on TV, they don't really think it happens. But this is good information to, if you are looking at a child that does look somewhat, you know, that they haven't taken a bath or they haven't eaten and they're hungry. I mean, you have to look into this. You just can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't ignore it. And you can't say, well, it's not my business, because it is all of our business.
Yeah.
Just because it's not your child, it is somebody's child, and that child needs someone to stand up and fight for them. And we don't have the luxury of just putting our head in the sand like an ostrich. It's just not acceptable.
So when they take them, so they do take them as far as, Brazil. And so then do they ever, when they get older, though, do they know what's happened to them and do they want to find their parents again? Or
most of the kids, if they're taken as a child or a young girl, they spend about, the average is 7 years as a sex slave, and then they are murdered.
Murdered. Oh, my God.
Yep, they are disposed of.
I can tell you that Maria is absolutely correct, and this is an appalling part of the story that was just horrendous that I found out. But they also use these same sex slaves in snuff films, and those films sell for $5,000 each.
Oh my God!
It's unbelievable. And so, do you think that, if they're very young, they do remember, or do they just block their other life out because they have no choice but to just block it?
I think that they know better than to ever refer to their former life. I think that they have been abused to the point that they wouldn't utter their true name, their true location, or their parents' name. I think that they are taught from the second that they are taken to keep their mouth shut and do exactly as they are told.
You listen to this and you think, oh, this is fiction, but it's not. This is true. So, and that's why I think it's probably very good that you did it in fiction, because then people will read it, because otherwise they may not want to read issues like this in a book. Because, but you put it in ways that will draw their attention. And maybe, now.
Yeah.
Just right now,
you're
doing right now. And that's why people, and so I know that you two want to go out and talk. Where would be the places that you want to go talk if you had your, wish to go, to talk to people? Which would be the places that you want to go and speak to them?
Right now, Washington State, they have found, is a huge hub for human trafficking here in the U.S. For some reason, Seattle, Washington is where a lot of it is happening, and the FBI has been called in. They're using the, task force to try and take this, stop this activity. Dallas is another place that this is just huge, but you've got Traffic 911 that is based out of Dallas because they saw the need, and they are really stepping it up there. But places where we know that it's really happening big time, that the normal residents aren't even aware. They go about their normal lives and they don't stop to think of what's happening on their streets, in their neighborhoods. And that's what we want to do, is bring awareness, to those places.
Yeah, because are you saying that, let's say a man and woman, that they are pretending their parents are not really their parents and, have all the right, documents, and then they put them in school? Do they do that too?
Well, they have been known to put them in school. The younger the child is when the child is taken, the easier it is for them to enroll them in school. However, schools have gotten quite good at requiring specific documentation, immunization, so on and so forth, birth certificates,
right,
Social Security numbers. Now, the well-financed traffickers, of course, it's easy for them to get such documentation.
Right.
They can do that. But the child, you then have to, if you are a trafficker, you have to worry about what the child will tell. And
right.
So the younger the child is when they are taken, the more likely it is that that child will be enrolled in school. If the child is older, it's less likely. And in so many states, you can declare that you are home teaching your child, and that is often what they declare.
See, that is a big thing, because there are a lot of people now that are homeschooling. And so, you can't look at everybody and say, are you doing this? But sometimes maybe you should look into things like, not everybody would be doing this, but whenever somebody might suspect something, then they should, even if they're homeschooling. Yeah. See, there are a lot of people homeschooling.
Well, that's where the neighbors come in. Neighbors and people who go to church with these people or any acquaintances or friends, if you see something out of the ordinary going on next door, that's where you come in, you know, in making that phone call. Know your neighborhood, know your neighbors, you know, keep an eye out. Look for stuff like this.
Now, I don't want to call attention to every passive child, but one clue that I've recognized, I'm getting very good at finding the child who's been sexually abused because I'm a foster parent,
right,
and I have so many children come through my home. But if
right.
you see a child that will not make eye contact, that looks down, that speaks in one-word sentences, that doesn't want to answer you or has long pauses all the time avoiding eye contact, who has a very meek, mousy, passive persona, this is a child that something is terribly wrong. That
now,
is
now,
not
if
a
if
normal
a child. If you see a
child
that, like, would be, you know, like every, you know, naturally I write for children and Jan does too, and there's, like, if you see a child and they, you know, they don't want to ask, you know, a lot of kids are more private. So
mm-hmm.
would you, I mean, if they're unusually quiet or if they're just saying they don't want to talk about anything, or they say,
No, because there are children that if you just meet a child, especially a small child, and
yeah.
they cower behind their mother or what have
yeah.
you, that's not the same thing as what
no,
I'm talking about.
No, I don't
about.
Mean that. I meant, like, if you ask a child something and they'll say, you know, I don't want to talk about it, do you think there's possibly something wrong? Or, you know, because some children don't want to talk about anything. So
what?
Would a doctor, would a pediatrician be able to, let's say, maybe find that out? Because I think sometimes, I remember in the office I worked at, sometimes they would have the mothers go out of the room because when the mother's there, naturally nobody would say anything, and hopefully the doctors would maybe ask the right questions.
Well, I think that the doctor needs to be skilled in dealing with children
yeah.
and
yeah.
knowing the questions to ask in a non-threatening way.
Right.
Those are easy skills to learn. I think that you are probably going to have more than a 15-minute session with a child you've
right.
met for the first time to really
yeah.
find out anything.
Yeah.
But I think most of us possess the quality to know when there might be something wrong. And like I said earlier, there is nothing wrong with picking up the phone and making a phone call and saying, you know, this could be absolutely nothing, and I am not accusing anybody of anything, but I am concerned. This
yeah.
is the child's name. This is where they go to school. You know, I like I said, it could be nothing, but I have a very uncomfortable feeling. And let social services take it. They're not in the business of snatching up people's children just for the heck of it.
Right,
the states are too strapped financially for that kind of nonsense. They're only there to help those that stand in need. And it's like Marie said earlier, if you were walking down the street and somebody attempted to assault you, wouldn't you want somebody to help, even if it was
yeah.
just a phone call to 911?
Yeah.
Be the type of person to stand up. Be the if you can't personally get involved, that's fine, but you can certainly make a phone call.
Right.
Well, see, that's what's happening with all the colleges and everything.
Let me just ask quickly about the website for Trafficking 911. Is it an org or .com? So I can put it up on
it is .com.
.com. Okay. Thank you.
Would you say because the economy is also very bad, people are doing things that they might not have ever done before with their children, or?
You know, that's just, I get that question a lot from people
yeah.
who really do believe that.
Yeah.
Here's my thing. There is never a good enough excuse
oh, no, no.
or reason
I know,
or
absolutely.
Circumstance.
Well, I know that. I know that. You know, you're right. But I'm saying, you know, thinking about, you know, because things are so bad, you know, and people are desperate, and it would be a horrible way to think that people would be, but because of these times, people are doing strange things that they
okay,
normally
but you're
wouldn't
either, do. Well, you're either a pedophile or you're not. You're
yeah,
either
right.
a pimp of a kid
right.
or you're
right.
not.
Right.
You know, I mean, nothing could make a really good person that loves children, understands they need to be protected and have their innocence maintained for as long as possible. Nothing could ever make a good person do that, no matter if they were living on the streets and had nothing to eat.
Well,
you have to be... You have to be evil and defective and something seriously wrong with you to want to pimp out a child or touch a child inappropriately.
Yeah, it's just, I mean...
Maria is absolutely correct. Your circumstances, your financial circumstances will not alter that portion of who you are.
Okay.
What can happen and what I have seen happen in foster care is that there may be physical abuse under stressful circumstances, and I'm not talking about sexual abuse, sexual abuse, but physical abuse under times of duress. And we've noticed an influx of children coming into the system around the holidays when parents are expected to provide Christmas presents and whatnot for their children, and if there's absolutely no money and the stress is just, you know, astronomical, then the parent could lose it and hit their child.
Yeah.
But I have never seen a parent, because of stress, all of a sudden become a sexual predator or, as Marie said, a pimp.
Right. Yeah. It's just, you know, listening to this, it's like you're almost, it's, you know, it's because so certainly when I write fiction too, you're just thinking of all these things and you're thinking of how people could do such a thing. Now, I know that you have a list of ways that people can keep their children safe. So I think that might be a good thing to tell people out there of how to try. I mean, we all try as parents, but what do you feel are the most important things that parents can do so they keep their child safe?
When I was studying criminology, we were forced to watch videotapes of pedophiles talk about how they chose their next target. Why did they latch onto a certain kid? How did they gain opportunity to grab their next victim? And one thing that rang very clear to me was, if someone is scouting your neighborhood and looking for their next victim, they are looking and watching your family's routine. They're taking note. They're looking for that 15 or 20 minutes that your child is alone from the time they got off the bus or was walking home until you get home. They're looking to see if you allow your kid to play outside without any supervision. You have to change your routine frequently as a family. I know how hard that is because we rely on these routines, but they're watching, and they're looking for that moment that they can grab your child. But if you're constantly changing up your routine and you're also being very proactive and making sure that your children are being supervised even while playing outside, then that will, they'll move on. Now, that's horrible because we don't want them to get their hands on any kid, but that's a way to protect your children.
Also, there is the ones who do the crime of opportunity. You know, they just happen to see a child by themselves, and, you know, and that's, you know, a lot.
Well, I think, you know, and I think that's the thing, you know, like, you know, every parent, you know, you try to watch your child when they're outside, you know, and, I mean, I would think, for me, I think a child shouldn't be out there alone sometimes, because I remember even my son was little, people would say, why are you watching him? I go, because I'm watching him, because there's nobody else out here except him. It would take 2 seconds. Somebody will take them in the car, and they go right off on the expressway, and that's it. And that's all it takes. I mean, it's a second. So if you leave your child unattended outside by yourself with nobody, you know, not that another small kid, but I would think if someone's alone, it's a lot easier to take them when there's two.
Right, right. And I always take my I've got a lawn chair outside, and when my kids want to go outside and play, I take my laptop, and I go sit in that chair, and I've got my drink sitting there, and I watch them. And all of the neighbors know how I am. And so, you know, nobody's going to get to my kids.
People, I remember our neighbors would say, why don't you leave them alone? Stay, you know, why are you doing this? You know, like thinking that he's not going to grow up and be okay because I'm sitting there watching him. I said, no. And they said, well, we never did that. I go, well, that's you, not me. because I'm not going to just leave him out there. I said, look around here. Do you see anybody out on the street? There's like nobody there. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, and because I didn't care either what they thought, because it's my son. He's out there.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes neighbors tend to think you're overprotective, but that's too bad. You know, you have to sometimes take your own stand and just, you know, if, like you say, you take your laptop and you go out there.
Right.
I have constantly been appalled at the apathy of parents who think that doesn't happen, that won't happen to me, that won't happen to my child. Well, I can guarantee them that every parent of every child that has been snatched up, every child that they search for the rest of their lives, thought the same thing.
Yeah, because I think people tend to think that, oh, if you're living in a very quiet, residential, wonderful area, nothing happens. That's wrong.
That's exactly where it happens.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, how many times do we have to see it on television before we smarten up?
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. Another thing is I subscribe to familywatchdog.org. They will alert you, and they'll bring up a map and a list and pictures of all the pedophiles that live in your area. And if one moves in or one moves out, they will send you an email alert. You can even have those sent to your phone. I know how close the nearest pedophile is to me, where exactly their house is and everything at all times.
Don't you think a good place for you that you might want to, you know, talk to people would be the PTA, you know, the mothers and the fathers that come to the PTA meetings? I mean, that would be, I think, a good to start at a place like that, because I think they have no clue of, some parents just don't have a clue of what's going on, and that would be a great place, I think, to start talking to people, because then maybe they can make a difference in their area, depending on where it is.
Well, and our PTA here at my kids' school has talked a lot about it, and the reason why we did especially is because we just got sued, our school did, by the ACLU, because it was a rule in our county at our school that pedophiles who had been convicted, a sexual offender who had been convicted and was on the sex registry list, could not attend the school functions. Well, they sued us.
Yeah. Really?
And they won.
Oh, my God.
They won. And so we can't ban the pedophile from being at the school function, but they have to give the principal written notice like 3 weeks in advance, and then we can bring in security, and then all the parents are alerted. We know what the guy looks like. We watch our kids and stuff like that. But a lot of parents have now said, I'm just not going to take my kid to any school functions because
it's way too exhausting. That's totally unbelievable.
Yeah, we lost. Can you believe that?
Unbelievable. I mean, sometimes some rulings should be changed, you know, because, sometimes you have it in a, just because you have it in a book doesn't mean that it should be forever, that it should be a certain way. But I think the part about changing the routine is kind of, like you're saying, very difficult, because even if you don't have kids, if you're older, whatever, it doesn't matter where, you know, what it is, you have a routine. And you're right.
I know.
You don't think about that you do the same things all the time. And, you know, certainly when you have young kids, you take the classes, you do this, you have dinner at this time, you go pick them up with their friends, whatever you're doing, it's at the same time. And so I think that's probably an interesting thing that people don't think about.
Well, we don't think about it. And the pedophiles know that. They know that. They study us. This is what they live to, grab their next victim. They dream about it. They fantasize about it. It is all they think about. It's like a drug for them. And so they are going to study our families. They are going to know when they can grab our kids, when we're not paying attention.
In your book, that's your beginning of your book, in your book that is so incredible. It's Marie talking, right? I was also looking at it as your writing quality is incredible.
Thank you.
You got right in that scene that I have not ever read a scene like that. And I've done a horror movie, and the scene that you got like into the brain there of oh my God, it was a very, I mean, that's important. So, you know, it was a fiction book, but you know that this is somebody that you see in your head.
Right, right. And this is something that's real. I mean, when I was watching so many taped interviews with pedophiles that were saying, this is how we find our victims. This is the type of kid I went after. I was looking for the kid that was at home for 30 minutes before their parents got home. I watched neighborhoods. I watched the bus drop off the kids. Then I timed to see how long until their parents got home, you know, and things like that. And so, you know, I thought, people are not aware that's how these pedophiles work. So I have got to put it in the book so that it sinks into my reader.
Oh, my God. You did. Oh, my God. I'm thinking, oh, this is just the beginning of the book. I'm thinking, okay. But, you know, honestly, but it, you can see that it was very intense. And, you know, I mean, this is an intense topic. I mean, you know, kids, you know, they're walking down the street. Someone said comes to the car. As much as we tell children this, they sometimes will walk over to the car anyway.
Yes, they will.
You know, my son, when he was little, I mean, I trained him. I mean, I just, because I had worked for pediatricians for years. He was walking home, and my very best, one of my friends, you know, was driving and said, come on in the car. He wouldn't even go because I said, do not, I don't care who it is, do not go in that car. I don't care what they tell you. And we had a password, a name, that if something was wrong, that he would know I said that password, then he could go.
Right.
So we had our own secret password that the two of us knew, and if somebody stopped him, if they didn't say, if they would say your mother's sick or something, they would have to have said that, otherwise he's not going. You know,
right.
I mean, because I mean, I did, and I believe that what you're saying, because I know this can happen, and I know that once it's done, and they're gone.
Right, and then you just see the parents up on a press conference pleading and begging for the safe return of their child, and it's just so rare that the child is ever returned. I mean, Elizabeth Smart, that was a whole miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I was living in Utah.
Or D.C., what was her name, D.C. Dugard for 28 years?
J.C. Dugard, yeah.
And she was a, he admitted that it was a crime of opportunity.
Right,
know.
Right.
The opportunity, see, right, this is so important, you know, to talk about, because it's, you know, it's just these little things that everybody does that you don't realize it. You know, even I think when parents are in the grocery store, I see the kids walking around, I'm thinking to myself, where's the
right.
parent? Because somebody can just take their hand, give them something to eat, and they go.
Right.
Years ago, our family was in a Walmart, and we took the kids. This is when Marie was really small, and we took the kids into the food court at this Walmart and let them get some things to eat. And while we were sitting at this table, we noticed that there were three really young girls. And by young, I mean probably the youngest was like 8 or 9, and the oldest one may have been 12. And they were sitting at a table close enough to hear their little girl talk. And this older man, I would say he was probably about 60, walked into the food court, sat at their table, which their tables were sort of like lunchroom tables. And he started asking them questions like, what are your names? Who are you? You know, is anybody here with you? Where's your mom? You got an older brother, older sister? I mean, just inappropriate questions that told me that he wanted to know if they were alone and if he could get away with something. So I excused myself, and, of course, he wasn't paying any attention to me, and I went up to the cashier and quietly asked her to get security, and she started to give me a bit of a problem. Why are we getting involved? And I said, well, since I know this man is up to no good, and if anything
right.
happens to these girls, you now know he's up to no good, and you and Walmart will be sued beyond belief. I suggest you get security. Well,
right.
she did. And security, the girls got up and left the area. The man immediately got up and followed them. And, of course, I got up and followed them because
right.
I was, you know, I wasn't
exactly.
sure security
yeah.
you know, was on the job, and I wasn't going to let him do anything to them. And the girls went about the clothing section and here and there and whatnot, and then they started to head out the front door with this man right behind them. And as soon as he got in the vestibule to leave, security said, "Hey, you," and he took off running out those doors and through the parking lot. They didn't catch him. The point was he was going to harm those girls. You know, it's a moment of opportunity, but we were paying attention. We're a family that pays attention, and we're a family that gets involved.
Now you took in with foster care. Now, so how, you know, obviously you're very loving, and then after they get to a certain age, do they come back and see you? And, I mean, are they close to you, or do they
tell you,
thank God, as they get older, they realize what a great thing you did for them?
Well, the very first foster child that we ever had 13 years ago, she is a nurse, she's married, she has 3 children, and she just went to girls' night out with Marie and myself and our other daughters.
Oh, wonderful.
That's a, yeah.
So,
well,
yeah, my husband,
you know, she is my sister. We do not differentiate between them. I mean, she is my sister, and
I love,
you know,
that.
She's on my Facebook page, and her kids call me aunt, and, you know, there is no distinction that is made. She is she's part of our family.
Because I think I was telling
you. A little cute story was we got a call from this, I guess I can say her name, Katrina, the very first foster child ever in our home. We got a call from her, and she said that she had been called to the school because her daughter, Katie, was in trouble with her English teacher, who happens to be the science teacher as well. Apparently, Katie was not doing her science work in class. She was writing her first novel. And she explained to her teacher, who's also her English teacher, I just had I had a storyline I had to follow. my aunt Marie and my grandma Pam, they're writers, and I'm going to be a writer.
I think that's so great, you know, because honestly, and I had said this to you, you know, Pam, because, you know, obviously not every husband is going to be as good as yours was, in you know, because a lot of times a lot of women want to do things like this, and I think it's terrific that your family opened up their doors for kids that would have had not the same upbringing, and they would have not turned out the same way,
yes,
and they have lived in the
life
that they live.
Well, my husband is very hands-on. He is right there with me in, you know, doing all of the, because there's a grind. You know, laundry has to be done, food has to be bought, houses have to be cleaned. It's not just the joy of taking in these children and living this idyllic life. There's a lot of, you know, we have appointments that we have psychologists and therapists,
yeah,
and so on and so forth,
yeah,
and we divvy up the workload. We have to, and he's wonderful about it.
That's great. I mean, so how many kids have you had at one time that were in your home?
The most that I've had at any one time was 8 foster children,
yep,
of my own, and it was right at Christmas time, so I got 5 others that's called respite, because this family was going out of state and could not take their 5 foster children. So, you know,
wow.
I had 13 foster children plus 2 birth children in the house. So 15 kids,
wow,
at Christmas time.
Wow.
And it was wild.
Wow. Well, you know, I think, you know, honestly, you know, I always have, and this is actually, you know, when I talked to Julie from JKS Communications, who brought you to me, and I heard about this, and when I talked to your daughter, Pam, I thought, like, oh, my God, because I have seen people that have done this, and I knew them when they worked and I worked in a pediatric office, and they were wonderful, and these kids were so lucky to have her, and I can't imagine that these kids, I mean, it's just wonderful that you do this, because, I mean, and there's so many children out there that could, you know, use children. How would people, if they wanted to do this, how would they start, in case, you know, somebody out there might say, oh, maybe I should do this, what would they do?
Well, it's very easy. You call up your local DCBS, your social service office.
Mm-hmm.
You tell them that you would like to take their MAP classes, which MAP classes are the classes that foster and adoptive parents, mm-hmm, must take in order to become a foster or adoptive parent. But in the meantime, you can also ask for a worker to check out your home and your, you know, your legal history to see if you have anything in your past that would be inappropriate. Of course, if you did, you certainly wouldn't, you shouldn't be calling them for this.
But, you know, it's interesting that you're saying that they have classes. And, you know, working for years in a pediatric office, like, we saw a lot of parents, you know. I mean, we had I was in a very busy office. We'd seen like 100 a day, you know, and I was doing lab work. And, you know, it's just interesting to think about all these things when you realize in some parents, we always used to say, there's no class to be a parent. And, you know, honestly, sometimes there should be, because a lot of parents really don't know how to be parents.
No, they don't. And these MAP classes, which I'm trained by the state to offer MAP classes, I'm also trained by the state to write usually 30 to 50-page outlines on potential foster and adoptive parents in their homes and so on and so forth, background histories and whatnot. And all of these MAP classes have been put together by psychologists and therapists and so on and so forth. So it gives just everyday parents. I mean, everyday parents should take MAP classes.
Because sometimes they really don't know what to do. They're overwhelmed.
Exactly.
They thought it was going to be like they were babysitting, you know. And,
right.
And it's not the same.
No, it is so not the same. And but you could, to answer your first question, you could become a respite provider very simply, and within just probably a week or two, what that would entail is respite means babysitting. And you could babysit for a foster parent who needs a break. Everybody needs a break every now and again. And before you become a respite provider, however, they will check your home to make sure that, you know, everything is in order. You don't want your bleaches down where little kids can get them, and you certainly don't want your guns and your ammunition sitting out and things like that. But also, you'll be fingerprinted, because they absolutely don't want a pedophile babysitting DCBS children. Yeah. So if you can clear all of these things and you feel like, you know, you can give a foster parent a break that they desperately need from time to time, please become a respite provider. And then go ahead and take the MAP classes, because you may like it so much you want to be a foster parent yourself.
I do think that there might be somebody out there that might want to do this. And I also think that I really do think that the PTAs of different, you know, have you thought of writing some type of a book? You know, I think I asked you that when we were talking once, of some type of book that you can have for the schools that they, you know, the parents could, you know, maybe understand this a little more. Because I think that, you know, just by what we're talking about now, I really think that a lot of parents don't realize that. I mean, they certainly wouldn't think their routine should be changed, you know, because a lot of people just have to stay in the same routine. And so, I mean, if they just knew how to do these little things,
that
would really...
I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah, you would save some kids from, you know, this happening too, because I honestly think some of these things that you're talking about, I don't think people think about.
Well, you know, one thing that they don't think about is how many families do you personally know, because I know a lot of them, that allow their child to have a computer in their bedroom unsupervised. Well, predators are on those computers posing as young kids, and those predators are then in your child's room.
Do you have an idea what sites they might be, what websites they might be on, you know, that they would get to something like this? You know, I wonder how they would get to
that. The chat room, they're on Facebook. Oh, they're on Facebook like crazy. They're just in Yahoo, everything like that. Anywhere where there's chat rooms, they pose as children. And when children think they're talking to other children, they'll complain about what's going on with their parents. Oh, they don't. You know, they're all up in my business. Yep. They don't understand me. So then the pedophile who's posing as a kid is like, yeah, mine too. How old are you? And then the kids start telling what school they go to, what activities they're involved in, where they hang out. The city, the state, they may even give their address.
I know. Yeah. See, that's the thing, you know, really... I mean, sometimes kids don't realize these things, and you're right. The parents have to come in the room and see what they're doing every few minutes if they're not in the room with them.
But what's so simple about that is there is technology to put on your child's computer that puts a little box on your TV screen in the living room that shows your child's computer, the screen. So you could virtually be watching TV.
That's an interesting thing. I didn't know about that. That's an interesting thing.
Oh, yeah. And see exactly.
So you can kind of monitor where your children are while you're watching TV.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's also programs so that, you know, it records every keystroke. So you can go back when you get off work or something or on the weekends, go back and see where your child has been online, who they were talking to, what they said, what was said to them. And that way, if you do see that something is really not right, and a kid, you know, these pedophiles are very good at pretending to be children, but a parent's going to pick up on a few things and go, wait a second.
Yeah,
no 12-year-old child speaks like that, you know, or they're really fishing for information. Then you can turn it over to the authority.
That's the problem with the Internet. I was talking to my husband that this is even with adults. There are no rules. And, I mean, I think, you know, you sign a paper, they say, oh, you're not going to say anything derogatory or whatever. But, you know, really this is such an open society now where nobody knows where they're coming from and who they are. And they really have to be careful about who they are associating with online. They don't, you know, because anybody could say anything. You could be talking to a woman and it's a man. A man, same thing. You don't really know.
Well, look what just happened with the second Craigslist murdering scam. You know, I mean, nobody is safe, but children in particular are our most vulnerable. And we as parents, whether they're your child or your neighbor's child, are responsible.
See, I think,
well,
you know, and go ahead.
Parents also need to understand, and the one thing that's really got me upset is this Dance Moms TV show that's on Lifetime, because this show, I get this third-party confidant person who sends me forums that he infiltrates that pedophiles frequent, and these pedophile board forums are going nuts over this Dance Moms TV show because they're putting their kids up on Lifetime on this show that are in scandalous outfits.
Right.
They're shaking their hips and gyrating their bodies. They're doing provocative dancing.
Makeup
and
on.
These pedophiles are saying the most disgusting things. And they're talking about if they could ever get their hands on these particular girls. Well, these parents need to understand your child, they have just painted a target on their child's back.
Yep.
Plain and simple. All for a paycheck.
Yep. Well, I think that you're right. I mean, because, you know, it's these things that people don't think about. You know, it's just the way the society has become. You don't think about certain things. And I think by you being out there is definitely something that needs to be done, because I think you're gearing toward parents, because this is who is responsible for their children. And they have to be responsible adults to realize this might not be a good thing for them, the kids, in the long run.
But the parents don't care as long as they're getting a paycheck.
Well, that's what
infuriates me.
So, all right, is there anything either of you would like to say? I want both of you to give your websites again and your books. And, you know, this has been so enlightening. I mean, Jan, I thank you too. I mean, we're just listening, and it's really, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking I can't even, you know, it's so unreal to really realize what really goes on there. And I hope that if one child is saved by this, you know, conversation we're having today, it's a good thing, you know. And it's really tremendous, and I thank Julie, and I will email her. But I want you to just give your website so people want to ask you any questions, or if they want to read your books, which they should, because it's done in a way where they will get the message.
Perfect.
Right. Well, my website is MarieChrist, CRIST.com. My book that is out now is Citizen Out. It is the first in the Citizen Chronicles series, and book two will be coming out in just a few months.
And I'm Pamela Wright, and my website is PamelaWrightBooks.com. That's W-R-I-G-H-T. My series is Justifiable. Book one is Justifiable Oregon, with Justifiable Mexico soon to be out as well.
All right, thank you. And I cannot thank you enough for being on the show and telling us. It's very enlightening. And Jan, did you want to say anything? Or
it was a great show.
You
thank
know,
you.
I really appreciate it because it's, you know, it's a lot of things that people really don't realize that they need to take care of, you know, and I hope that we did something here that people will remember. So thank you so much for being on, and I will talk to both of you again because I'd love to have you on the show with any of your new books or, you know, and certainly when you're out talking. And I do think there's a lot of places that you can go to that really would benefit from this, because I think by hearing you speak and what you talk about, I think that would help parents all over the United States. And thank you again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.